Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the National All VR conference call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the star followed by the one on your telephone. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Tuesday, August 11th, 2015. I would now like to turn the conference over to Nate Arnold, Social Security Administration. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the call. Thank you once again for joining us. I think we have a very interesting agenda lined up for you today. And as usual, I will try and do my part and not hog up too much of the time at the front end. I want to draw your attention to a message on the chat line. This call is really going to focus on our youth transition and the presentations today. So if you have questions about our traditional cost reimbursement stuff, I encourage you to, if they can't wait till next month, go ahead and send them into the VR help desk. And I know you guys have that link and email address. And I know there may be some other questions out there about the ticket portal or something like that. So I want to also remind you that there are orientation sessions planned for each of the remaining Wednesdays in the month. I think there's one tomorrow, the 19th and the 26th at 3 o'clock EST. So feel free to attend one of those, and hopefully that will also answer your questions there. Okay, as I said, we're going to have two presentations today on youth transition practices, and we will have a separate question and answer session after each one, so you can focus specifically on the one that was just presented. I know you're all aware that youth transition is one of our major areas of focus this year. Last winter, we announced that we were going to host a series of programs to help increase awareness, promote best practices, and discuss barriers to successful employment outcomes. In April, we held the first of those at the CSA VR conference in Bethesda. Todd Honeycutt from Mathematica Incorporated discussed his research and findings related to youth transition and employment outcomes. We subsequently distributed the link to Todd's presentation to everybody we could think of, but if you still haven't seen it, please let us know and we'll provide you with that information. Today, you're going to hear from two organizations that have been successful in helping youth with disabilities transition to work. Our first presenter is Andrea Guest, the director of Delaware Division of VR. You know, I catch myself saying VR. I kind of flash back to my fraternity days when I was in college, and you were never allowed to say frat because fraternity stands for brotherhood, and you can't abbreviate brotherhood. So the way I feel that VR stands for rehabilitation, you really shouldn't be able to use an acronym for that either. So I'm going to try and always remember to say the whole thing. But if I'm not mistaken, Andrea also serves as the transition committee chairperson for CSAVR. And those of you who have looked at Todd's information or the Mathematica studies know that Delaware was in the high-achieving group in pretty much every standard or every sort that they did in that data. So looking forward to hear what she has to say. Andrea, the airwaves are all yours.
Okay, thank you. And I may use the term VR, so it is okay.
It's okay for you to.
Well, I want to thank you for inviting me to present on behalf of our Delaware Division of Vocational Rehabilitation Agency, as well as our Department of Education. And I included DOE because we did invite a representative to present with me, and he just wasn't able to join us this afternoon. But we can achieve our work readiness and employment goals for students with disabilities without this important partnership between DVR and DOE. And we're very fortunate in our state to have an excellent working relationship with our Department of Education agency. I know, as you said, many of you are impacted by new provisions in the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act, better known as WIOA, and are looking for ways to create opportunities to meet requirements of the pre-employment training activities in the law, which the acronym known as PETS, which doesn't seem to be appropriate at all times, but that's what we're calling it for now, that's stipulated in the law. So what I wanted to spend some time talking about are some of the ways to work with students with disabilities to achieve the goal of employment and thus lessen their dependence on benefits and also comply with WIOA. Just a little bit of background for you. Our Delaware DVR agency has had VR transition counselors assigned to every secondary school in our state for over 15 years. That's enabled us to have some long-established partnerships and relationships, which are designed to serve students who qualify for the VR program. About 15 years ago, we placed an emphasis on providing services to those students who traditionally had been targeted for placement in sheltered workshops or day programs, or maybe not any program at all when they completed school. Many of these students are students with the most significant disabilities. They're recipients of SSI, Medicaid, and sometimes many other benefits. We designed a collaborative program and called this Early Start to Supported Employment. This collaboration included our DVR agency, the Department of Education, all of the local school districts, the Developmental Disability Services Agency, as well as our provider agencies. The overall goal of the program was to start services early. Traditionally, we had provided VR services to students maybe in their last, towards the end of their school year, or many times even after they finished school. So we thought that in order to be more successful, it was really important to get to these students early. And what we did was we decided that we would pay providers to provide supported employment services before they exited school and start their services, usually their second to the last year. And what we wanted them to do was to follow the SE model, provide community-based assessments, hopefully find a job and do some job coaching. The ultimate was to have all of this in place so that when the student exited school, they would transition into their long-term agency for long-term supports, which in our case is the Developmental Disabilities Agency. At the very least, we hope that some parts of the supported employment process get started. So some students may leave where they've just had their community-based assessments. Others may exit where they've had the community-based assessment as well as found a job and some job coaching. And some may leave when they're stabilized. It varies from student to student. What I can share with you is our data in 2013 indicated that over 80% of the students who participated in Early Start to Supported Employment were successful in gaining supported employment opportunities that led to competitive employment. And while that sounds like a really good statistic, and it is, our challenge now is reaching those two students who choose not to participate in the Early Start program. And the way that we're doing this is we have a marketing initiative that was developed with our State Employment First Commission, and this involves some videos and some printed material to really educate primarily caregivers and family members to the value of work for their children. We're also using benefits counselors because we know to work with our supported employment students and their families because we're all well aware that the fear of losing SSI, Medicaid, or other benefits often makes the choice of employment seem risky. So educating about benefits is always a critical component to assist students and their families to choose employment. We have two other programs that we classify as Early Start to the employment. One of those is Project Search, which I know probably many of you operate in your states and are familiar with, as well as a program here that is called Start on Success, We actually found this program in our sister state of Maryland. SOS, as we call it, is similar to SEARCH. It serves students who are also currently in school, but their disabilities are primarily learning disabilities as well as behavioral health issues. Start on Success recruits a business partner, so it does look similar to SEARCH. They conduct pre-employment classes within the business, and that includes soft skills training, and then they develop paid internship sites throughout the business. SOS, both in Delaware and Maryland, has a 90% placement success rate, which, again, is a very high rate. And that's what we find, that these programs that really do community-based work with a lot of one-on-one attention and partnership with businesses tend to be very successful. The last initiative I want to describe to you actually came out of the new changes in the WIOA law, which require that VR agencies spend 15% of their what is called 110 VR dollars on students with disabilities, which in our state is the age of 14 to 21. The law caps the bottom age at 14, but the top age is whatever your state has as the year that students can stay in school and then have to exit. In Delaware, it happens to be 21. I know in some states it can be 22, 23, and I've even heard of it higher than that. What we wanted to do was to use the summer as an opportunity to create some programs that address the core areas in WIOA that talk about the pre-employment transition services, and those being things like career exploration, work-based learning experiences, advocacy, and pre-college activities. So this past spring, we put an RFP out, and we asked our providers to be creative and to design a program to serve students that met the category of students that we were serving, and the students also have to be potential VR consumers. So we had no idea what we would get back, but we just thought, you know, let's see what our providers come up with. We received 15 proposals back and decided to fund 11 of them. While most, but not all of the programs have concluded this summer, a couple of them are still running, I can tell you from feedback that we've received just from students, parents, and others in the community that they have been really successful. Some of the programs run from 2 to 8 weeks. They were focused on areas such as culinary arts, customer service, hotel services, and just general work-based learning experiences. One program that we highlighted and actually had a graduation ceremony last Wednesday, and we had 15 students that graduated from this program, which the provider held in partnership with a local hotel casino. And the students were given customer service training during the day. And then at the end of the program, they also participated in job shadowing experiences. The graduation, we presented the story to the press. We got some really good press coverage. And I do have to add, one of the reasons we probably did, too, is that we invited our governor. He also attended the ceremony and was very impressed with the program. And if you're not familiar with Governor Markell in Delaware, he did have, when he was chair of the National Governors Association a couple of years ago, he did have as his platform the employment of people with disabilities. So he's been a great advocate for all of these programs. But I'll tell you a little side story. When after the ceremony, we had a luncheon for the students. Actually, the hotel did. I was in the buffet line, and I was watching one of our students was interacting. The head chef had come out, and I heard the chef lean over and told him, you know, if you ever want a part-time job during your school year, come and see me. And this was a young man who happened to have shadowed him and also wants to be a chef as his career pathway. And it just made me think of how often we don't quantify or realize how important the connections students make is to their success in finding employment, and how really important it is for us to expose them to opportunities to make those connections. So, and in addition to these kinds of programs, we also funded some students to attend the University of Delaware for a summer college experience. We have, the University of Delaware has a Center for Disability Studies, and they ran a program to give students the opportunity to live on campus, see what college life is like, attend some classes. Another small program that we had was with our juvenile correction facility, and this really involved just some really good soft skills training. So at the end of the summer, we're just going to go back and evaluate all of these programs, and we want to decide, you know, do we want to fund some for next year, but also look at some of them to see if it would be feasible to actually incorporate them within the school year and see if we can do that with any of our local school districts. So the bottom line from all of this is we know that students who have opportunities to experience work or participate in an employer-based learning experience have a greater chance of being successful when they enter the workplace as adults. And that's the premise that we're always operating from. So the important thing is to build partnerships, collaborate with your schools and other state agencies, and also involve your providers to create these opportunities. They may look different in your state, and I think that's fine, but the important thing is to get students out of their school settings and exposed to work in their communities. And as the agency responsible for employment services, I think that VR needs to take the lead in developing work-based learning experiences with employers, as well as assisting students to develop meaningful career pathways. I mean, we know that the schools play a role in this, and they have responsibilities that relate to transition and also to helping with career pathways. But we really need to be the experts. We work with the businesses, and we need to work with the schools and collaboratively to share this information. And all of the programs that I talked about are really designed to do this. And again, you know, we need to collaborate and develop partnerships with all of our schools, our DD agencies, our providers, and our families, ultimately to best serve our students. And when we talk about relationships, particularly with other state agencies who serve different disability populations or with our schools, it's just important to develop MOUs that clearly spell out the roles of each agency, and including the funding obligations, as well as specific responsibilities that each of you have to make the program successful and to best serve the student. Because we know when we operate these programs, you get into some very nitty-gritty details that, you know, when you think about things like transportation and, you know, just with students in the summer, maybe how they're going to eat lunch, there are a lot of details that you need to spell out to know who's going to be paying for what and who's responsible. We have separate MOUs for our Early Start to Support an Employment for all of our project search sites. So when we're involved in a big initiative like that, we're going to do a specific MOU. The new requirements in WIOA related to pre-employment training does create a challenge for a lot of us in determining what portion of the 15% that we're required to spend on pre-employment activities are actually should be designated for pre-employment activities versus traditional transition services. And I know that's causing a lot of concern for agencies that are trying to provide these services. And until we get regulations, it's it's going to make it a little bit challenging. But I think if you focus on the five core areas, I think that can make it a little clearer, which specifically in the law it's stated as job exploration counseling, work-based learning opportunities, counseling on post-secondary ed opportunities, workplace readiness training, and instruction and self-advocacy. Excuse me. And in our state, we really view this new WIOA law as an opportunity to create additional programs and services so more students with disabilities will have access to community-based learning, which in turn we know will result in more transitioning youth achieving competitive integrated employment as opposed to being dependent on full benefits and sub-minimum wage jobs. And overall, that's really what our goal is here. So with that, I'm going to stop and thank you for your time, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Operator, can you open the lines for any questions for Andrea?
Sure. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that's star 1 to ask a question. Your first question comes from Eugenia Cox.
Hi, this is Eugenia. I really appreciate your presentation on youth transition. We have a very good youth transition program here in the state of Oregon. And we weren't given much time. The presentation announcement that this meeting was going to be dedicated solely for youth transition. And we only got this message about a couple of days ago. So we weren't able to get any of our youth transition folks in, to be in on this call. The people that are on the call right now were anticipating that there would be some sort of cost reimbursement update at the very least. And I believe that the people that were able to get on the chat in the presentation are asking for a possible Q&A at the end to be able to answer our questions because of the fact that we have so much going on with the portal and problems with claims being denied and everything else. I think that waiting a whole month to be able to ask these questions is asking a little much from us.
Thank you, Eugenia.
I can tell you, too, that at CSAVR in the fall conference and also on our transition committee, that if your transition folks aren't on the call, will be other opportunities that we're doing some of these presentations.
Yeah. Was there going to be a response?
Well, this is Desiree Fitzgerald. I just want to reiterate that these monthly calls are a time that we come together and we take a pulse, but throughout the month, you're able to communicate with us. We have a special help desk for a ticket to work portal. Of course, you're aware of the VR help desk. You have access to management here, and we want to do business all month long, and we want to communicate all month long. So don't feel like you can't, get your questions answered. We're available to you, and so I just don't want you to feel like you have to hold it all for.
Well, that's really not the issue. The issue is that we get together once a month where we are all in on the call and we're all able to hear the problems and hear the issues and get an answer. Or have you tell us that you're going to get an answer for the next time. And that's really the issue, is that this is the only time that we have to be able to get answers and for everybody to hear those answers.
Okay, well, we will keep that in mind, but this is also a forum where we know people already have it set aside on their calendars. And when we schedule something and it's a day other than the usual forum, then we don't get as much participation or there's concern because we're not using that usual date, so we're kind of between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah.
But we hear you, and we will make every opportunity to make sure that we are satisfying all of the needs. We have a very interesting topic today, And so we would like to get back to today's agenda.
Yeah, it is an interesting topic, and had we been given enough notice, we would have been able to have those people in on the call. But the problem is those people, and most of those people, are not in on this call.
Okay, Desiree, thank you. This is Regina Bauer, and I'm a director in the Office of Ticket Operation and Provider Support, and I work with Des. But just to add, we do remember telling you last month that we would schedule a separate call, and we reached out to several VRs in reference to that, and you indicated that you wanted a separate call. So we will set up a separate call to address those concerns. And we were just deciding, some people said that they wanted the regular call that we have now to address specific issues, and so we're just discussing that now. But, Eugenia, I can tell you that we will set up a separate call. We will address all of your issues, and we do have the help desk. And we'll now just get back to the presentation. Thank you.
Your next question comes from David Weaver.
Oh, hey, Andrea. Thanks for the presentation. You mentioned your counselors are in the you put a VR counselor in every school or secondary school in the state, I think. What do the counselors do? Do they help with the IEP, or how do they interact with the student?
Some counselors have they all have more than one school. They might have five or six schools. So usually, depending on the size of the school, they'll spend maybe a half day to a full day. They're really meeting with, at this point, this is prior to PETS, with potential referrals for transition students who will become clients of theirs in the VR program. Like for Early Start, it's that they get referrals of the students who would be appropriate for the Early Start to support an employment program. But they get referrals from special ed of all the students who potentially would like VR services so that they can meet with them and discuss that. If they're able to, they can attend IEP meetings and provide some consultation to the special ed teachers when they're trying to do career kinds of programs.
You also mentioned that you thought it was important to work with benefit counselors. So do you guys work with the WIPAs in the state, our Work Incentive Planning Assistance Organizations, or other benefit counselors?
Interesting topic right now. we're going to be funding our own WIPA counselors. We've had them. We had the WIPA program in the past, but it seems that some of it's moved to more of a call center model. So we have our own benefits counselors, and we're going to we use them to really focus on VR, our VR clients. And when we have what we call for support employment provider fairs, so we have opportunities to meet with groups of families, students and their parents, and a lot of times we'll do benefits counseling presentations in groups. And I can tell you that's when you talk about, you know, sometimes parents, they say they don't always turn out for different kinds of activities. When it's about benefits counseling, we find we get very large turnouts because they really, you know, want to understand how the benefits are going to impact their son or daughter going to work.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from David Leon.
Hi, I just wanted to go back and follow up and try to understand why there will be no discussion on the things that matter to state VR agencies in terms of cost reimbursement and the ticket. And while I did hear your response, not being able to talk this through with counterparts in other states in the same role doesn't lead to resolution or problem solving. So partly, as stated in last month's call and is available in the minutes, the first thing in this agenda was supposed to be an answer to questions, and again, it was part of the minutes for the last month's call that was how this call would begin. It doesn't feel like there's a respect for the time for those of us on this call to get done our work, and I'd like to see how this will be addressed and if these calls will ever go back to what they were originally intended for, because we have a lot of questions, and I'd like to get resolution on many of them.
Hi, David. We appreciate your concerns, and we do respect your time. This is Regina again. We are planning to have a separate call to address payment issues, any concerns, any help desk issues, just that we have some very important information and on the youth transitioning, and we wanted to share that with everyone. So we were using this particular call to share this information, but that's not to say that we don't think the questions that you have or your concerns are important. After this call, I'll give you a call and we can discuss this, but yes, we are going to set up a separate call. Nate Arnold reached out to several VRs, and in reaching out, they expressed some of the same sentiment that we want a separate call. So we were looking at that. We were going to go out and survey some of the VRs to find out what topics you want on those calls and to set up those calls. So again, we appreciate the input, and we do hear your concern.
So again,
we ask for your patience. Hold on, go ahead.
It sounds like what is going to happen is that there will be a predetermined message of what SSA and OSM feels VR needs to hear each month, and that is what this call will be going forward. Is that accurate?
No, we will ask you and we will address any of your concerns. We just want an agenda when we have the calls so that we can, keep them within the time frame and everything. But we want to address your concern. And if you do have concerns, we do have the help desk. And if you call the help desk, and you can also call me anytime or Desiree.
Regina, my last two requests to the help desk from 2 weeks ago have still not been answered.
Okay, after this call, can we handle this after the call?
I actually copied Robert Staff on my last issue because I couldn't get a phone number or contact information for the person who was requesting information on a case I needed to get paid.
Okay, David, after the call, I will call you directly, okay? And we can get that resolved.
Well, it's been resolved now, but it took me multiple hours and a lot of back and forth with people who thankfully I've worked with enough to finally get me a phone number. But that's one of the minor issues. The forms you send out don't even have accurate information for us to respond.
Okay. David, can we discuss this after this national call?
Certainly.
All right. Thank you. We'll proceed with the presentation.
And your next question comes from Mike Hermanson.
Yes, this is Mike Hermanson in Montana, and I have similar concerns. This last set of reimbursement responses I got like a 70% denial, and I've never had anything like that. And most of them were from one person. And on the bottom it says, if you have questions, call. And I called and left a message, and nobody's ever gotten back to me.
Hello, this is Michelle Legere from Awesome. We will address your question, as Regina has stated. And, operator, we're going to go on to our next presenter.
Okay.
Nate, do you want to introduce the next presenter, please?
I'll be glad to, Michelle. Thank you. And thank you to Andrea. I'm sorry that you had to kind of sit through our internal family squabble there, but your information was very helpful, and I appreciate your time. Our second presentation today is by Susanna Gomez. Susanna's the Youth Services Coordinator at Resources for Independence in Fresno, California. Her organization provides a wide variety of services to individuals with disabilities, and today I think she's going to tell us about their high school transition program, as well as some of the other programs they offer that have been successful. Susanna, take it away.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for having me. Like Arnold said, my name is Susanna Gomez. I've been with Resources for Independence as a youth services coordinator for quite a bit of time. We serve the Central Valley. And my discussion was going to focus more on our services and how we incorporate soft skills and why they're so important in helping youth with disabilities have successful workplace situations. And the reason that we have really incorporated soft skills is because, you know, youth with disabilities already face social disadvantages, and in addition to dealing with disability adjustments. And I really feel that by learning soft skills, this will lessen those disadvantages and increase the chances of having workplace success. So we have dedicated major components of all our services to incorporate these important skills, the soft skills training. So I'll be talking to you about the practices, the things that we do to deliver this important training. I really feel that in high school, it's important to introduce these trainings to those youth at that time. That way they have more control of their future, really encourages and increases the expectations for work and academic achievement. It improves employer and coworker relationships when they get to that situation, and it really helps them to improve the social relationships that they develop within the community. So I think it's really important that, you know, in the transition to receive this proper training in areas like sociability, you know, discipline, leadership, just attending things, you know, all those transferable skills. A lot of it involves these social skills that that we call soft skills, and they're just really becoming more expected by employers. Employers want people to be able to interact with employers appropriately, and it really helps to maintain jobs and helps in the job search as well, even before having a job. And so oftentimes in my experience, I've been working here for 12 years, and I've seen that, you know, these skills are very overlooked in school and at home. And so a lot of times when we have certain youth come to us, unfortunately, you know, they've been told, okay, develop a job portfolio, but they're not sure how to communicate effectively, how to be on time, and why those things are so important. So we really, like I said, incorporate this into all of our services. And so I'm just going to go over the services and the practices that we use and how they directly and indirectly support workplace success for youth with disabilities. So just basic, you know, we provide one-on-one case management. When it comes to soft skills, you really need that one-on-one time to really assist these youth in developing those skills and to master these skills and be able to apply them to real situations. So in our case management, we make those meetings very interactive, use all learning styles, really pay attention to tailoring those services to the individual and making sure that they're receiving the service that's in the way that it's most going to benefit that individual. And so when we work with youth, we, you know, we work with them, not for them. We really have high expectations of, you know, making sure that they call in for an appointment and not their parent. And so we, that's in their plan. You know, it's that we let them know clear cut that that's their responsibility. And then in this situation, then that can, go into making referrals to DOR. A lot of times the youth are not ready to work because, you know, being on time is difficult for them, or is having effective communication. They don't know what they want to do. They don't know how to relay that verbally. Their body language, you know, says, you know, I don't really want to work. I don't really care. But so we teach them, like, we use interactive and, you know, use videos, role-playing, just a lot of different activities so they're able to visualize how they look and how to read others as well. And so we use that to prepare them on how to access resources, you know, asking questions, advocating for themselves, and all those skills are then they're linked back to why they're so important in a work setting or looking for work. a program that we've developed and we've been running for a few years now and is just becoming more successful each year, is we have the Bridges to the Community Summer Program. It's a 4-week long program that we run, and basically the way it's set up is the first week is dedicated to general life skills. The second week is dedicated to teaching social skills or quote-unquote soft skills. The third week we speak about vocational skills, and the fourth week is their volunteer work experience. And so the way this program is run is we use in class and in the community trainings. So we're not just in the classroom. We're going out into the community using public transportation to teach them about interacting in the community, you know, asking questions in the community, you know, going to an employer and asking for an application, handing in the resume, dressing appropriately. So everything's reinforced with real life experiences. And so the social skills, soft skills week, that's when we really dedicate that time to developing those effective communication, problem solving, active listening, teamwork, self-advocacy, and why those are all so important in helping youth maintain or, you know, to do a successful job search, because, you know, you have to use soft skills when you're looking for work, and also to maintain your job, because that's really important at work, is you have to have good interpersonal skills to maintain that. And so we kind of teach them what it looks like. And so through that program, we develop partnerships with businesses. So during the volunteer work experience, they all choose a site. So we've collaborated with college, you know, Fresno State, Fresno Rescue Mission, Fresno County Office of Education. So there's a variety of opportunities that they have to go and actually apply all these skills that we've been teaching them in the first 3 weeks. And a lot of times that turns into, you know, a long-term volunteer situation, or it turns into employment because, you know, we're able to discuss with the businesses about our program, and, you know, then it kind of a lot of times people have these prejudices of, you know, oh, a person with a disability, and they have these misconceptions. So through this program, we really do away with those, and people are able to see, like, okay, you know, they have a disability, but does it mean that they're not able to maintain a job? And through this program, we've really seen a lot of success in that, in our partnerships. Let me see. So we also, in the previous presentation, it was mentioned about collaborating with high schools. We do collaborate with high schools in adult transition programs, so that's part of our services as well. We go into the high schools and we collaborate with the teachers, and we go in and we do presentations. We do workshops on soft skills, so that way we already create that awareness and teach these skills that way. When they leave high school, they know that they can still work on those skills and access our services, but they're aware how important these skills are as, you know, the technical skills, the technical aspects of job searching. It's not just about having a job portfolio. It's about how are you going to hand that job portfolio in? You know, are you going to make eye contact? Are you going to look down? What's the difference? And so we collaborate with about 12 high schools and ATP programs, and, you know, we have a lot of other high schools and ATP programs that call in and request for presentations on soft skills, because we really worked hard to create that awareness and demonstrate how important it is. And so we don't have a lot of staff power, but we try to hit access as many youth, especially before they leave high school, so that way they are aware of how important these skills are to develop. We also have partnerships with organizations like California Foundation of Independent Living Centers in Sacramento, where they allow for us, our organization, to hire two interns, And so they're getting paid experience, and during that time we're able to work with these youth on developing those soft skills, because a lot of times we get these youth who haven't worked, and, you know, they're late all the time, they're not organized, they don't have a plan, they're just real basic stuff. And so we really work with them on developing those skills, and we've seen the success after they're done with their year internship, and how they've really taken these skills and have learned to apply them in a real work setting, and then in turn they have successful employment later on. We have a partnership with Fresno County Office of Education. They have the Transition Partnership program that is funded by Department of Rehab. And so they focus a lot on, you know, working with youth on doing job development. And so we've partnered with them to come and do workshops where they would they'll focus on the job portfolio aspect and talk training about that. And then our organization will focus on training the youth in soft skills. That way it increases more success in maintaining employment once they find a job. And we also have some youth resource books available that we have developed. That there's a job preparation series, and then there's also a soft skills series, and we do have them for sale. And if anybody is interested, it is on our website, www.ricv.org. It's very fairly inexpensive. They're like $12 a set for like 4 books, and it's very specific to soft skills, and it really just highlights the importance those skills, the importance of those skills in maintaining a job. We also have a self-advocacy conference, which is the only one of its kind in the Central Valley, and so we're able to prepare a lot of the youth in how to attend something like that. It's a professional setting. You know, they're required to come, you know, professionally dressed. Like, you know, we talked to them about being on time, how to communicate with other resources that are going to be present there, asking questions. That way you learn more during the breakout sessions. So soft skills, it's something that we really just incorporated in all our services, because we just see it's really important to develop those skills, and they take time. And so we really just dedicated a lot of time to making sure that those skills are not overlooked. And I think that is, we do have, just mentioned, we have a Creative Careers, which is a vendorization through Department of Rehab. So a lot of times we get youth who maybe are not ready to go apply for DOR services, they're not ready to, you know, be in a job situation. And so sometimes when they go, many times when they go through our training, they feel more comfortable, you know, calling. They know what kind of job they want. We assist them in doing the research and knowing how to present that when they do go in for their appointment. So in turn, indirectly, then they get referred to Creative Careers, which helps them in that job development or job placement aspect. So there's ways that we directly assist youth in having successful employment, and there's also indirect ways that we assist them, and that's by, you know, helping them and learning how to use other resources out there. And I think that's it for me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Susanna. Operator, would you open it up to see if we have any questions directly for Susanna?
Sure. At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. And there are no questions at this time.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you again to both of our speakers. Before we go today, as I mentioned earlier, this was the second in our 3-part presentation on youth transition practices. Our third one, we're going to try to get together sometime in September, but I'm going to ask Shada Roper to kind of give you some background on that. Shada?
Good afternoon. Thank you so much, Andrea and Susanna. Your presentations were wonderful and very valuable information presented, and I'm hoping that it was very helpful to some of the other VRs. Nate mentioned that Delaware is pretty much running the race in Todd's research for all the areas of success in youth transition. So we're hoping that the information that was provided is very useful. I noticed that soft skill was mentioned both from Delaware and California, so we know that that's a thing that they have in common that is useful to their handling of transition and transition services. So thank you, ladies, for working with us and being able to do this for us today. The September call, which will be a separate call from the all call, it will be a completely separate call. We are seeking, and we're saying this now so that it's out there to everyone, to identify youth that have been successful, former beneficiaries that were successful in their endeavors with VR. In addition, we're hoping to find some who had obstacles in their services between VR and Social Security so that we would be able to later provide some, through this information, provide collaboration through both services, the VRs and Social Security, to better be able to benefit youth, seeing as how this is very important and pretty much at the top of everyone's agenda at this point in time. So thank you, and thank you, everyone on the call. Thank you for your participation.
Thank you, everybody. Have a good day.